Most colleges today ask you to leave your faith at the front door. But at Northwest University in Kirkland, their door is wide open. Listen as NU's Provost, Dr. Sarah Drivdahl, describes how their approach to academics encompasses the whole person.
Christian, higher education has many different purposes, but I would say the most important thing that a university can do is to help students find their call and serve Christ to their fullest potential. And that is something that Northwest University is in the Ivy League at doing, that we are so good at helping students figure out who they are, learn the information they need, become the people they need to be to really advance the kingdom of God. And when I'm in a classroom at Northwest University, we get to talk about not just this topic, but we get to talk about how Christ relates to that topic. We get to teach the whole person.
NU's application deadline for fall classes has been extended to June 1st. A Christ-centered college experience is still possible, and generous scholarships are still available. Apply today at northwestu.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it, you should download it immediately. A viral video has a detective with Seattle Police Department under investigation, all for pulling over a Metro bus driver. Seems to be much ado about nothing, but activists are now amplifying this story. And that is what's trending.
What's trending on the road?
The incident started to gain a lot of traction over the weekend. It was a video posted on TikTok, and then I saw it posted on Instagram. And it came from March 28th on a rapid ride bus going into Chandler's Cove. And as the bus driver was going about his route, you had an officer who pulled out in front of the bus that was driving in the bus-only lane. Now, obviously, the cop was going somewhere he needs to go. And we've talked a lot about the absurdity of pretending that an officer who's on duty needs to stay out of a bus-only lane if it is necessary for him to get somewhere for his job. But in this case, we don't know the specific details on where he was going or why he decided to go into the bus lane. But the bus driver committed, according to the officer, some kind of act of road rage. Now, the only thing that we know as of now that that took place on this day was that the bus driver honked his horn at the cop. That's according to the bus driver. The video does not show any of what led up to this. So the bus driver honks at the cop. Then the driver flashes his rear police lights at the bus. The bus driver continues on the route, but then the cops ended up pulling up behind him, activating their lights again, and then pulling him over. Now, the bus driver, according to the stranger, and I don't know if they've spoken to him or they're basing it solely on some recorded radio chatter from King County Metro, but the bus driver, as he pulled over, assumed the officers had their lights on because they wanted to clear traffic or maybe pass around the bus. But the cop car stopped behind it, and the officer got out and then boarded the bus. And again, we don't know what ensued up until the person decided to start filming. And I would have filmed too. I'm not giving him a hard time. But didn't really start at the beginning of the conversation, or if he did, we don't know how much of the beginning did he actually miss, which maybe explains some of it. But you can hear some of the interaction between the driver and the cop.
You cut me off as I'm in motion.
That's
and
the driver.
I almost hit you. So I have
bus
a right to come off the horn to let you know, hey, I'm here.
Okay.
So I have a right to let you know, to honk the horn, to let you know, hey, I'm here.
You don't have the right to cut off a bus.
I didn't cut you off.
It's on camera.
Great.
It's on camera.
Great.
So, and you can already tell that the bus driver has attitude. It's very clear. Now, let's say he was 100% in the right in what happened, or not even in the right. He described accurately what happened. Yeah, okay. So why are you getting all, like, angry in front of this cop, which is incredibly unprofessional to do as a bus driver in front of your bus patrons, but the cop, as far as we can tell, again, I guess we don't know what happened before this part of the conversation occurred, seems to be keeping his cool and having like a reasonable conversation with the guy. I know as a matter of fact that the way this guy is reacting to the cop goes against policy with King County Metro. You're supposed to have like respectful conversations with law enforcement and actually listen to what they tell you to do.
Get your supervisor down there.
I'm waiting for
them
to respond.
Okay. Well, let
them
know to get another bus down here, another driver down here. You're not driving.
People take me to jail?
Maybe. Right now you're obstructing.
How am I obstructing?
Because I'm stopping you.
For what? What is the
for the road rage.
There was no road rage.
What do you mean there was no road rage?
Show me a statute that says I'm a person who's not
So hard to say there, but show me a statute that that says, I'm assuming either that you can't honk a horn at a cop or road rage is, I couldn't quite hear, but obviously he's saying, show me a law.
Where's the law? Show me the law.
We'll wait for your supervisor to get down here.
By the way, don't go to a cop and say, show me a law. It doesn't quite work like that. They're not going, what do you think they're going to do? Pull out the RCW? That's thousands and thousands of pages long and point directly. Like, just that's not how it works. And he's not under arrest at this point, nor is he really even he's not being detained. He's being stopped and questioned. And at this point, it's when the cop clearly not getting an answer out of this driver, according to this video. Like, at some point, then, yeah, you're pressing your luck with this cop.
Whatever your supervisor is called. You're refusing to give us your ID.
Yeah, I'm refusing to give my driver's license.
Okay, that's fine. We'll wait.
So he refuses to give the driver's license, which people say, well, we can do that. Not if you're a King County employee. Not if you're a King County employee, not in this context. It's against the policies specifically of King County. So there's about, I want to say, 2 minutes worth of video. Not all of it. What we just played for you is the best part of it. But obviously, if you're the stranger, you're going to lean into this and you're going to claim that the bus driver is 100% in the right and the cop is 100% in the wrong, despite the fact that they have zero clue what actually happened. They have no idea. Neither do I. I'm not saying that this was a correct stop initially, but I am saying that the way the bus driver reacted to the stop is absolutely uncalled for. Absolutely uncalled for. Now, the stranger says there's no law in Washington that bans road rage specifically, though some laws do prohibit aggressive driving. And I imagine that is what the officer was responding to. We don't see the aggressive driving, though. Honking a horn to alert someone you might hit them, as the driver said he did, does not appear to be illegal under Washington law. I don't know if that's really what the bus driver was doing. Whether or not the driver violated any laws, he may still face consequences from Metro. Metro's rules and procedures tell drivers to cooperate with law enforcement. And it's at that point where I think they're conceding, without saying it directly, that this driver overreacted or certainly didn't follow policy, at least according to the video that we have access to. Then they dive into the officer. He's a detective with the Special Victims Unit. And they just go into his background and claim, you know, they're implying that he's a bad cop because he had some OPA complaints filed against him, which good luck finding an officer now who doesn't have OPA complaints being filed against them. Whether or not something is sustained is what matters. And in this case, everything that was accused of was either rejected or overturned by the police chief. So this is not like some dirty cop. You might not like cops, but it doesn't mean you get to smear every single one of them. Or I guess you can smear, but we're going to defend until we have reason to believe that the action is indefensible. And there's nothing here that we've seen indicating that. Like, nothing there. And we're obviously going to get eventually the video associated with this. The second the radio show is done today, I'm going to put in a public disclosure request. I'll get the video and I'll get the audio and we'll see what's going on. Unfortunately, just telling you, showing you how the oversight office and policy is weaponized. He's now this officer who I'm not going to name. I'm not going to drag him through the mud, but he's now facing multiple OPA complaints. Multiple complaints. And let me just real quickly do a count because the people who filed complaints against him certainly were not on the bus. Maybe one was on the bus, but the people who even know how to file Office of Police Accountability complaints are activists or journalists, right? We can just be honest about that. That's the truth. And so now I'm looking at it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So you've got 14 complaints based on this video alone against this officer. 14 of people who were not impacted in the slightest other than being on a bus that gets pulled over. And that's not the cop's fault. That's a driver's fault. But you've got 14 complaints of what? Unprofessional conduct towards not you. Right? I mean, if you believe he was unprofessional, which it's on the video, it doesn't back up him being unprofessional. But if that's what you, but 14 complaints is now what this officer is going to have to deal with. Going through the investigation with an organization, an agency that is run by an anti-cop activist who has already gone out of his way to say that he's going to file investigation findings against cops who are accused of violating traffic laws, even in response to an emergency, like going to a drive-by shooting, going to a DV call that's active. If that cop decides to drive in a bus lane, gets a complaint on the way to save someone's life or help someone, bam, all of a sudden they have to go through an investigation. It's absolute nonsense. And so we'll be keeping our eye on this particular case because it seems like it's now open season again over at The Stranger. They're getting increasingly desperate to go after cops because they realize that the era that they reign supreme as far as activism at the forefront of what guides the council and the mayor's office is actually coming to an end and is probably at an end. So now they're going to try to gin up controversy wherever it is they can. And that means they're going to go after cops who don't deserve it. Now, if they have any reason to believe this cop did something wrong to justify the kind of hit job that was done in the article, then they should put that out there. But they don't, which means they're just hoping that this ends up finding something to go against this cop on, some finding to hit this cop with. And if they don't find anything, they'll do one of two things: completely ignore the story from then on out, or complain and imply that he didn't get found guilty of anything, but he did, but he's getting off easy because he's a cop. That's what they do. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Technology.
Some folks just got a little bit of a reprieve from losing their jobs, although probably not for long. We've talked a lot about and been fascinated by Amazon's Just Walk Out technology. This is technology that you find for those of you who've maybe gone to an Amazon Go or Amazon Fresh store, or perhaps you've been to T-Mobile Stadium and went to the Amazon Go shop at a Mariners game. You basically walk in, you have an app, your Amazon app that gives you access. You walk in, take something from the shelves, you walk out, and it automatically hits your account. Whatever it is you took, they charge you for. If you take something off the shelf and then put it back, it knows, and it doesn't give you any sort of fee, right? You can walk in, walk out, not take anything, and just move stuff around the shelves, and you'll be fine. Believe me, I've tried to get it to screw up. I've not been able to get it to screw up. So, and that would have made a very good story. Amazon screws up, costing Jason Rance $2.79 for a beef jerky stick. So Just Walk Out technology obviously has a lot of promise. The problem, however, is that it is really complex still, that it requires a whole lot of cameras and motion sensors and whatnot. And it would appear, based on this news from the Associated Press, that it might be a little bit too complex because they are now removing the technology from its Amazon Fresh stores as they try to, at least for these grocery stores, revamp them. They say instead it's going to be replaced by smart carts that allow a customer to skip the checkout line and essentially scan the product when they take it from the shelves, put it in their cart, and in real time, you can see how much money you're spending. Which actually, from a consumer standpoint, unless you truly just don't care about how much you're spending, or you generally get the same thing so you know what your spending habits are, But this is probably better from a consumer perspective of being able to see in real time how much money you're spending. Because, there, you know, some of us have been at the grocery line and they say your bill is, $110. You're like, ah, I got to put something back. I've only got a hundy on me, whatever it happens to be. So I kind of like this. But the reason why I say it gives a little bit of a reprieve for folks who might lose their jobs is all of this technology is clearly getting us to a point where we're taking human beings out of the scenario, out of the picture. And we've already been going down this pathway for a long time, right? I mean, you can go back when you would just call a 1-800 number to buy tickets to a concert or something. It used to be that you would stand in line at a Blockbuster Music or a Tower Records. And now you just call the number or you go online. You never even talk to a human being. You just press through some prompts and you end up purchasing your tickets. You've got self-checkout kiosks already at grocery stores. You've got the kiosks at movie theaters. All of that technology, which is essentially the kind of, you know, AI technology that we're talking about here, that's putting people out of work, right? I mean, every single time you've got one of those kiosks or self-checkout stands, all that means is you need one fewer or even two fewer human being employees. And the idea of having this just walk out technology where you have very, very, very minimal human staff, that obviously comes with implications. So we're headed in that direction. And while unions have been pushing you to ask for $30 an hour or $40 an hour, because they're just all crazy absurd and they end up making more money at the managerial level or the leadership level for unions, you end up basically forcing companies to adopt this kind of technology to begin with. I mean, not to call Amazon a quote-unquote enemy in the traditional sense, but their technology is the enemy of human workers. And in some cases, I think it would behoove us to protect human workers. And in other cases, it would behoove us to say, yeah, no, this makes more sense to go on the tech side of things. And I think when dealing with folks who have few skills, which are your traditional grocery store workers who just get started, they're, you know, looking for their first job, and maybe they're, you know, working their way up to a manager position, which obviously takes some skills. But the average, you know, front-end grocery store worker doesn't have a huge number of skills that are unique to the individual. They have skills, but it's not unique to them or to a small group of people. That is a prime job that is up for grabs, right? I mean, from a technological standpoint, why pay someone who isn't really contributing much other than just a basic to the business when you can have the basic to the business be handled by a shopping cart or by cameras and sensors? You make the argument very quickly, especially when you're being told that that worker now wants $20 an hour or $25 an hour to do the same amount of work that doesn't require a whole lot of skill. Sorry, that's just a hard truth. And I say this not to, you know, bag on grocery employees, not at all. They're obviously important. They're just not highly skilled. And I say this so that they get the skills that they need in order to get that next level job, whatever that might be. And the same logic applies pretty much everywhere. Just looking at radio, you know, we used to have screeners. That was like the lowest on the totem pole position. That's where I started in radio when I was like 15, 16 years old. I was answering phones for a radio show. Well, guess what? That job no longer exists in a lot of ways because, number one, we generally talk radio generally doesn't take calls as much anymore for certain, but some shows like this show, we just don't take calls. In other cases, you've got technology that allows you to not just text, but leave voicemail messages, which is what's going to happen next for the KTTH app. So not only can you watch the video stream on the KTTH app now, but you can also listen and soon leave your voicemail messages and those will function as a call. So if you were a screener and instead of working, if I at 16, 17, 18 was just a screener and not working to develop my skills and you know, try to gain more knowledge of the industry, I would, of course, have been out of a job within a few years. But what did I do instead? I learned how to produce. I learned how to run a board at the time. I learned all of these other skills, including how to really effectively host a radio show. And that allowed me to pick up everything I needed to ensure that I wouldn't just lose a job because new technology or changes in an industry took place. People are still going to lose their jobs no matter what, even if they're working really, really hard. That's just the nature of business. Sometimes people have to lose jobs. But it seems to me that there's just been the wrong focus on wages and perks and the work-life balance than there have been around just education and skills. And I don't even, when I say education, doesn't even mean necessarily going to school, although it could mean going to college or graduate school, whatever it happens to be. But just taking classes or getting certified in a certain skill, or even just teaching yourself how to do certain things that are relevant in the industry you want to work in. That's the best way to ensure that when these technological impacts happen, and they are happening now and will happen in a bigger way soon, you're just better prepared. And you know that most people are not going to follow that advice. They're not going to do what's necessary. So you doing what's necessary puts you in an even better position. Otherwise, you're going to be vulnerable to losing a job and hoping that there's some legislation that comes forward that essentially stops the technology from taking your job. I just don't think that that's a smart move. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Religion.
I'm not entirely sure I know what this means, but Richard Dawkins, who's a famous atheist, they label him an evolutionary biologist. This is a guy he's a jerk. He's just a jerk. He's one of the atheists that gives atheism a bad name. I personally don't care if you don't believe in God. I feel sad about that, I suppose, but it's your belief. You get to believe whatever it is you want. The same way, I don't care if someone believes in a different God than what I believe in. It just doesn't bother me. If you try to push that on other people, it does start to bother me. But he's just got a bad attitude. And now he's come out in an interview about how he now identifies as a cultural Christian. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, the cultural aspect of religion is incredibly important, be it Christianity or Judaism or pretty much any religion. The culture around it is an important part of what makes someone religious. It's not just about the belief in God, but it's about how you handle yourself, how you work within a community, how you back the traditions of religious history. Like, all of that matters. And it's interesting because as he's having this conversation, it happened in the UK, where he learned about Ramadan lights. They were hung on the streets of the United Kingdom. I think it was specifically in London, as opposed to hanging lights to celebrate Easter. Dawkins was making a reference to the 30,000 lights for Ramadan that were put up on Oxford Street in London. And he gave an interview with the LBC on Sunday, saying, "I must say, I'm slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. I feel like we are a Christian country. It's true that statistically, the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy with that. Oh, God. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we substituted any alternative religion. That would be dreadful, truly dreadful." Now, I'm sure that made a lot of the folks on the far left and maybe some within the Muslim community really upset. So I guess he's just working hard to get everyone to be mad at him. Look, at the end of the day, it's not like I disagree with him. And I'm a Jew. I don't want to see any of those, you know, pieces of cultural and historical importance be taken down. I don't like the idea of celebrating to the detriment of other religions, one particular religious holiday, because, you know, you like the message that it sends about how woke you are and how you're pushing back against Christianity or Judaism. It just, you know, it always feels like there is an adoption of certain kinds of religious holidays if they're part of the quote-unquote right religion coming from a marginalized community. And that's the only reason why they're doing it. It's almost to, you know, purposefully dismiss people with whom don't subscribe to the quote unquote right kind of view. And they view Christians as having too much privilege. Again, if you want to celebrate Ramadan, but also Easter and also everything else, then go for it. I have no problem with that. But it's the what seems like the purposeful moves to just go ahead and dismiss a huge group of people because you want to make some sort of weird political point. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to dive into the drama in the city of Carnation. They're going up against Seattle over a dam that has a system, an alarm system that just doesn't work. And the city of Seattle refuses to do anything about it. So what happens next? It looks like a lawsuit. We'll talk with the mayor after this.
When you want to keep listening but won't be near a radio, there's an app for that. Stay with KTTH as Republicans push to win back the White House.
We just saw Biden down at the border. It was his second trip in 2 years, both for political reasons, both photo ops, and in both cases, he did not even see a single illegal immigrant, which almost takes effort given what's happening down there. They didn't want him to see it. They cleaned the whole thing up.
Download the AM770 KTTH app in your Apple or Android app store or at KTTH.com.
In December of last year, officials with the city of Carnation, they offered a really simple and clear message to the city of Seattle. The time for excuses is over. They're talking about the Tolt Dam's warning system, which keeps malfunctioning. You've got alarms going off when there's nothing wrong at all, endlessly causing needless panic for folks who obviously would be concerned if the dam has been breached. The dam is actually run by the city of Seattle. Well, as we told you last week, there was yet another false warning. City leaders are absolutely done. So what exactly are the next steps? Joining me on the line to discuss is the mayor of Carnation, Jim Rebale. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for reaching out, Jason. I appreciate it.
Last year, I believe it was in December, you met with the mayor's office or even directly Bruce Harrell. Did they make any promises that they're just not keeping?
We met with the mayor's office, and this has been going on since 2020, was the first round of promises when we had our first false alarm that kind of brought this to attention. Now we're going on our eighth incident of alarms going off, things malfunctioning and not working properly, and all along it's been promises that we're going to get a new system, a better system that worked better than the old system, plus some enhancements with some digital signage on SR-203, and to this date, we have none of those delivered right now.
So you're saying none delivered, as in they didn't just install a new system that just also doesn't happen to work. They've done nothing.
Well, to give them credit, they have installed new sirens, but those sirens are the ones that are continuing to false alarm. So the old system is decommissioned as of October 18th of last year. So the new system that is installed is the ones that we're having a lot of problems with.
Are they, in your view, working in good faith to get this fixed, or is this just an incompetence issue? Is this them not really working? What do you think is the underlying cause here?
I think it's a sense of urgency around it. If this was happening in downtown Seattle, this would have been repaired within 6 months inside the city of Seattle city limits. The fact that Carnation is, 20 miles away from the city of Seattle, I don't think it has the amount of attention that it deserves.
When you meet with them and when you've been having conversations with them over the course of the last several years, obviously you're dealing with different people, most likely. I mean, a few years ago, you had a different mayor, different people in charge. Has it been pretty much the same kind of reaction each time?
Yeah, everybody is very apologetic, very sympathetic to what's going on. They offer their, sympathies to, what's happening. But at the end of the day, we continue to have problems. We still don't have a system in place that people trust. And I think that's the real issue. I've been to the dam 3 times. The dam, is safe, in my opinion. The problem with it is that we have this warning system now that if anything ever did happen, people don't trust it.
Exactly.
People no longer evacuate when the alarm goes off. They try to call City Hall. They try to call SPU. They text and email me about what's going on instead of actually evacuating. And that's a failed system.
What's the worst case scenario if the dam were to breach?
Worst case scenario would be that the city of Carnation is going to be under 20 to 30 feet of water. It would change the landscape of the Snoqualmie Valley forever.
Yeah. So that's why this is so important. There's nothing imminently, any imminent problems. There's no imminent danger, but you know, you have a warning system for a reason. And if, God forbid, something were to happen where the dam breaches, worst case, you've got an entire community that drowns, that is killed because they don't necessarily trust the system anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, if people trust the system, I mean, we have, at a full failure, we have about an hour to evacuate to get out of the system, to get out of the area. And it's fairly doable for a lot of people, but it's not doable for some of the people that are, you know, handicapped or elderly. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing that we've reached out to the city of Seattle is to, you know, have a real evacuation plan and actually infrastructure out here. I mean, this valley is a two-lane road, SR-203, and we are in needs of infrastructure from the county and the state. And frankly, I would even kind of debate from the city with, you know, with a dam that is 100% liability to the people who live out here, and it's 100% asset to the city of Seattle.
What are the plans moving forward? Because it seems like you can only have so many conversations. You've obviously escalated this issue by holding a press conference last week. What are the next steps?
Yeah, we've held press conferences in the past.
Yeah.
This press conference was a little bit different. We've actually directed staff to seek legal counsel to possibly bring a lawsuit against the city of Seattle. And they're in the works of actually, you know, seeking legal counsel to do that right now.
Did you get a reaction from the city of Seattle based on that move?
Not from the city of Seattle. SPU has been in contact with us with, you know, upgrading the system, trying to get the system, you know, working, but nothing in particular on that subject.
Did you expect to hear something at this point?
Yeah, I think if the situation was reversed, I would be reaching out to the city of Seattle with what can we do to help?
So, I mean, it's kind of a silly question, but I guess how does that make you feel that they're just completely ignoring them? Because the fact is, you've threatened them before, right? I mean, you've threatened to send them the bill for any kind of, you know, costs associated with this back in November of last year. Did you follow through with that?
We did. Yeah, there's an invoice that we currently are adding to that is at the city of Seattle.
Have they paid anything yet?
Which is not. No.
Okay, so I mean, they're obviously not, they're not taking this seriously, right? I mean, let's say you send another bill, they're just going to ignore that as well. How much do you think that they owe you at this point?
You know, I'm not going to specify on that at this point. There's a lot of components that come into this. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, infrastructure components, but there's also a whole mental health case out here where we have people that they will drive, you know, the test signal used to fire every Wednesday in the city of Carnation. And people will actually, if they're home, will drive out of Carnation, get away from the siren because it affected them so emotionally when that false alarm went off in 2020. I have a neighbor whose daughter, whenever she's home now, because she didn't hear it in 2020, when she walks into a room, she has to open up a window because she's so afraid that she's not going to hear the damn warning. Oof. That's the type of stuff that we're dealing with on the mental side of things out here.
So at this point, you feel the only option is legal recourse.
Yeah.
Assuming they don't change their stance here and actually do something to help.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, bottom line, they need a system that is reliable and that works out here. And they have failed to deliver that since 2020. It's been 4 years of this and continual false alarms and mishaps.
Yeah. I other than maybe hubris, I don't understand how they don't take this seriously. I get if there's one alarm that went off in error, it's a screw up. Those things happen. Sure. But happening over and over and over again over the course of several years, that's insane that they're okay with that. But, you know, it doesn't impact them, so they don't care. Now it might impact them with this lawsuit. So, you know, obviously we wish you the best of luck. It's in everyone's best interest to figure this out because we're not getting rid of the dam. We're not getting rid of the drinking water that this dam provides. And we're not going to continue to allow people to live in fear that the system doesn't actually work when we owe it to them to provide a system that does. So we wish you the best of luck. And we'll continue to follow this. Thank you so much. We've been talking again with the mayor of Carnation, Jim Rebale. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local.
AM 770 KTTH is here for you. Be a part of the conversation.
Imagine how bad it must be as a parent, be in a position where you can't publicly state any kind of disagreement with a teacher without fear of that teacher's wrath.
Keep yourself informed through our social media.
The president and his administration, his policies, I think that they have led in some ways indirectly to a lot of chaos, instability.
Follow AM 770 KTTH on X, formerly known as Twitter. This is AM 770 KTTH. The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The Quick Hit.
There's still some folks talking about the Candace Owens departure from the Daily Wire, and I thought we would spend a little bit of time jumping back into it because we're hearing from Ben Shapiro, who's not necessarily doing like a media tour per se, but he is talking about it on a few shows, at least as much as he can. I think some of this from Ben, who's on, by the way, KTTH Radio every weekday from 7 to 8. So right after a little more than an hour from now, he'll be on. But I think some of it is doing some damage control because there's some folks who falsely believe that this was, number one, personal, and number two, that it shows some kind of double standard when it comes to folks who preach about free speech. And obviously Ben, as someone who's, you know, a lawyer, but also a big defender of free speech, he wants to push back at that because, and this is a mistake that gets made by all people, regardless of political identity. You hear the same arguments coming from folks on the right and from the left when they talk about free speech rights being violated because someone lost a job due to something that they said. That's not free speech. That is not a First Amendment issue. There are themes that you could certainly say are similar, and there is that fine line between cancel culture and, you know, firing someone with cause or ending a contract or choosing not to renew, whatever it happens to be. So, and I say that, for example, as an example, if you have an employee who came out in a Nazi uniform and started screaming Heil Hitler, and he means it, and even if he didn't mean it, just kind of weird, I don't know how many people would truly say if that person was fired, as you would expect from a company who wants nothing to do with that person, well, it's cancel culture. No, that's not cancel culture. Cancel culture, to me, is a reaction that is not just overzealous as a result of just hearing something you disagree with, but the conduct is considered mainstream or would be reasonably considered a normal, legitimate position or comment that's not controversial at all. So, for example, saying you're a Nazi, that's pretty controversial. I mean, I know right now a lot of people are rooting for the modern day Nazis and Hamas, but pushing that aside, that's not cancel culture. That's like, yeah, you're a bad person, you're a bigot, and I want nothing to do with you. Now, if you come out and say you are pro-life and you get fired for it, well, that's cancel culture. If people who really had even nothing to do with the company coming out and saying, I can't, if you continue to hire so-and-so, we're out. We're done. You better fire them or we're never going to come back to your business again. Like, those are the kinds of things that I think qualify as cancel culture. What happened with Candace Owens, who was leaning into conspiracy theories, who seemed to be leaning in to some blatant anti-Semitism and just fringe views on Israel, a reaction, I guess, to Israel as I hear it, or as I'm told. I don't listen to Candace Owens all that often. I couldn't tell you the last time I heard one of her. I don't think I've actually ever heard one of her shows in full. But, you know, at some point when you go out and you court a kind of audience that is similar to the folks who listen to Jackson or Jack Hinkle, the anti-Semite, he's also a grifter. And I think also, if I'm being totally honest, Candace Owens, I think, is a little bit of a grifter. At least she's giving off those vibes. But when you court that kind of audience, well, why would the Daily Wire want anything to do with you? They, as Ben points out, he was on with Megyn Kelly yesterday. He pointed out that, hey, look, this has nothing to do with her position itself on Israel, because we've got other hosts here who hold positions on Israel that Ben disagrees with.
I mean, what I will say is that we have a wide variety of positions on Israel right now inside the Daily Wire. Matt Walsh, obviously, is another one of the hosts at the Daily Wire. He and I wildly disagree about what America's Israel policy should be. Matt is much more isolationist. He basically believes the United States has no real interests in the Middle East, and thus the United States should not be providing material support to anyone, including the state of Israel. You know, Matt obviously is well within, you know, the sort of group of hosts that we have here at the Daily Wire. So clearly whatever is going on is not about Israel specifically. That's really all I have to say about it. As far as the free speech of it, as I've said before, you know, the Daily Wire is a publisher, not a platform. I would never call for anyone to be ousted from an actual platform, X, YouTube. Even people who are, I think, absolutely horrific human beings, I've never called for any of them to be ousted. In fact, I've called for them to have their accounts restored if they've been banned. That's not the same thing when it comes to publishers. Publishers obviously have to decide what sort of things they wish to pay for the publication of. And when it comes to, you know, hosts and publishers, you know, parting ways, obviously there'll be a non-meeting of the minds. That's pretty much all I can say on that.
So he's 100% correct. And I think it's an important distinction to make. You do not have the right, especially when we're talking about a private company, you do not have the right to, frankly, have any position. That is up to the company and you. Now, you might have contractual agreements that give you certain rights and privileges, et cetera. But outside of that, unless the contract says you have the right to say whatever it is you want to say, and we can never in any circumstance take you off the air or not renew a contract or extend a contract because of something you said, unless that's there, you don't really have a claim that this is somehow a violation of your free speech rights. Number one, it's a private company, not a government. But even from just a practical perspective, you still, even if this was a government agency, you don't have carte blanche to say anything. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on the context. If you are working at the office and you spend your day tweeting things that are anti-Semitic, yeah, they can can you for that. And that's not a First Amendment issue. They're not a publisher, and he's 100% correct. They're not a publisher. And if you want the ability to say absolutely anything without any kind of consequences from your employer, then you do basically what Megyn Kelly on her show said after the answer from Ben, which was this is why she went into business for herself. She doesn't have to worry about, you know, even thinking about whether or not something she says might offend her employers or go against some of their values, right? So that's what Candace Owens should do now. I'm assuming, I know she said she's bringing her show back on, I think, on YouTube. You know, she might end up getting canceled from YouTube, but more power to her. I'm kind of with Ben, and I don't need her kicked off of any platform that's supposed to be about expressing one's opinion, even if it's controversial, unless they're going, you know, into the world of breaking laws. Have at it. I don't have to listen or watch or read anything from Candace Owens. I don't have to do that with Ben, right? I do it with Ben because he's a friend of mine and I happen to agree with him on almost everything. So, you know, this is not merely she said the wrong thing and that's wrong. No, it doesn't. It's not a reflection of Ben's position on the First Amendment at all. And it sounds from reading between the lines and, you know, hearing rumors and whatnot online, like this seems like what Candace Owens wanted. She wanted to get, quote unquote, canceled so she can say the Jews canceled her because then she'll get it's a small group of people in the grand scheme of things. But if you can own a large piece of a small pie, you can become very lucrative in business. And there's a small group of radicals, frankly, on both sides of the aisle. She's probably gearing more towards the folks on the far, far, far right who are anti-Semites, who are, in fact, white supremacists. It's a small group in relationship to the population of this country. And that's the truth of the, you know, Antifa movement on the left. It's a small group. It's loud and it's dangerous and it's violent, but they don't represent a large, you know, group of the population. But if you can get all of them to give you $5 a month so they become subscribers to your Substack or your X account or whatever it is you're selling, that's incredibly lucrative. I don't know how long you can go with that kind of model, right? I don't know. And it seems to be certainly risky because I imagine there's going to be people. And again, I go to Jackson Hinkle a lot because he used to be someone who was all in on the BLM movement, and then he switched to being a pro-Russia anti-Semite. And he right now is able to get away with that because of the small group. But when this is all done, when the war in Gaza against Hamas is over, when the war between Ukraine and Russia is over, what then does he do? Does he pivot to something even farther to the right, or does he try to moderate again? I would argue you can't really moderate when you get to the point where a Hinkle is, or where perhaps a Candace Owen goes. You're just not going to be able to do that, at least not immediately. Now, there can be an argument to be made that you kind of ignore those previous positions you've taken for a long time and then just do whatever it is you do. And then in time, people will simply forget. And then you can make a successful pivot. But I mean, that's a long-term commitment. And if you're not making money for the year or two or three in which you are trying to course correct your career because you went too far to one side to make some money, you know, I don't know if that's sustainable. I mean, look at Nick Fuentes, for example, another just a rabid anti-Semite, a white supremacist, a hate monger. Can he change his tune tomorrow and then automatically pivot to getting a gig on, you know, Fox or Newsmax, or if he's going the other side on MSNBC or CNN? No, of course not. Will he be able to do that in 2, 3, 4 years? Probably not. 10 years? Maybe. Maybe. It depends on what happened in those 10 years. Can he sustain himself for that long? No, not even close. Not even close. So this is, to me, a curious movement from Candace Owens. Megyn Kelly's made sense to me because she's not very controversial. I mean, she's pretty mainstream as far as conservative thought goes. I suppose she can be, I don't know, in your face, maybe, kind of, sort of. She cusses every once in a while. Ooh. But I mean, her views are pretty mainstream for the conservative movement. She's not controversial in any sense of the word. So going solo with her name recognition, with her media presence generally, with the fact that she's built up a lot of trust amongst conservatives, that makes total sense to me. That makes total sense to me. Lots of people can do that. It's not easy making a living doing it, but when you're at the level of Megyn Kelly, it's considerably easier. And she's got a ton of money, I'm assuming, from her NBC contract where they essentially paid her not to work, millions and millions and millions of dollars. So maybe this isn't as lucrative yet for her as it could potentially be. And she's just, you know, getting in the reps and creating this new online and Sirius XM show brand. And that's what she's just basically making an investment in herself. And I think that that's smart for some people. Other people, it's not smart for, right? I mean, we can all think of folks who, if they went independent tomorrow, it would fail miserably. There's 9 out of 10 times it's going to fail. You have to have a certain kind of presence. You have to be able to command an audience on your own without being propped up by whatever, you know, brand you might be associated with, or at least have relationships with brands that are very large that can help promote it. And then it'll get you to a good place. You know, people always kind of ask me, do you ever plan to go independent? I don't want to work that hard. I'm working hard enough as it is. My God, I'm already working 24/7. I don't want to have to work 24/7 and then worry about if I'm doing enough to build my own, you know, Substack account, which I have. I have a Substack account. It's 100% free. I just link to the stories I have up at ktth.com. It makes it a little bit easier, I suppose, for some people to get my content, which is why I promote it every once in a while. But for the most part, yeah, I'm not doing any of that. I don't have time for that at this point. I'm too committed to work, which is kind of ironic, I suppose, in the context of this conversation. 1-800-465-8774, your text. You've been listening to The Jason Rand Show.